Reynolds, who have not finished races well in the past, are going to do it today. Here they come another time.
Welcome to F1WP.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program.
I've been a fun fan for years.
F1WP.com podcast.
We're going to do tire changes maybe next year. I think we can.
Hi, this is Desiree. I'm your fabulous, fierce female Formula One fan.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1113, September 22nd, 2025, Stephen.
This is F1 Weekly Podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads bring you the F1Weekly.com web search for the ads that interest you. From Danica's tantrums to Danny's smiles, Yahoo Ads give you the stuff you really want. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. Wow. Wow. Is Max on fire or what? On today's program, ladies and gentlemen, it's a full-blown Max domination all across the F1 nation. McLaren drivers beginning to crack and get rattled by Mad Max. Ferrari driver swap stuck on the launching pad. And Fernando Alonso says he was sorry about the jump start, but he was just led away by Piastri. And of course, on this week's program, ladies and gentlemen, more Nasser Hamid Corner. We have Jack Harvey, way back when he was in Formula 3, and an early Pete Brazier report, which is very historical and machismo. And of course, we've got Tech Talk with Tim. And yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we do need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. So there you have it. Unbelievable. Let's talk about qualifying quickly because, well, even FP1, FP2, Norris is right. He commented on this that Red Bull shows up. They start working. They take a little nap. They work a little bit more. They go to sleep, and all of a sudden they come out quicker than you can shake a stick. So it's very impressive, the turnaround. Apparently the loss of Christian Horner has been a very good thing because, I mean, after Monza, to repeat that kind of dominance, I thought, are they really on a roll? Those upgrades are really working. But I mean, it's full-blown, and I know it's a lot of Max, but look at Yuki. Even in qualifying, P6 was just unbelievable. But the whole thing, six red flags. Now, I have to admit, I understand it's safety, but man, the red flags, they get thrown willy-nilly these days. But what an unbelievable qualifying. So many people hitting the walls, so many people hitting the barriers, ruining their rear ends. But it was quite shocking. And the McLarens, something happened. Now, George said he wasn't feeling well, but he did perform. But I suspect quiet Piastri maybe wasn't feeling well either. Or, when we travel, sometimes constipation can take over. And sure enough, I mean, it had to be something because Piastri, the mistakes were undeniable. And I haven't heard from him, but it was quite mind-blowing. And to see the mix-up in the order after all the crashing with Liam Lawson in P3, Carlos, vamos Carlos, on the front row. It was really an exciting day. It was a refreshing day. And like Norris said post-race, you can't be great all the time. We made mistakes, certainly in strategy, but I suppose he really wanted to say, we're just human, guys. So it was fascinating, but Max, is Max human? I mean, he does the Nordschleifer last weekend, and he's out here just dominating because that's what he does. So absolutely wonderful. And why don't we take a quick listen? Under 2 minutes of the race start. Gracias.
And it will be put to the floor as we go racing in Azerbaijan. It's a good start from Max Verstappen, who chops across sides and leads out of turn one. The top three, as they were side by side, heading through Lando Norris, trying to make gains on Yuki Tsunoda's Red Bull, further back in the pack.
Piastri's had a disaster. Oscar Piastri's last, the world championship leader, is dead last as we come through the first couple of corners.
Disaster for Oscar Piastri, who will try and make gains while the pack is still close together, but it was superb from Max Verstappen as George Russell edges out down the inside of Tsunoda, all cleanly through the first part of the lap. But we need to see again what happened to Oscar Piastri, who was absolutely plummeted. An uncharacteristic mistake from him yesterday in qualifying. The man who comes into this championship leading it by 31 points. Now, with all the work to do, as one of the Saubers has to cut across the chicane is Gabriel Portoletto, who rejoins, and now Piastri's in the wall. On the day McLaren could clinch the constructors, he's crashed at turn 5 and 6. What is going on lap 1 in Baku? The championship leader is out.
And there you have it. I mean, Max, beautiful start, controlled the start, and I have to admit, it was a very clean start for most people, except Piastri. I mean, he lost it, he jumped the start, and it just fell apart. I mean, he went all the way to last. Most people who jump the start pass a couple of cars because they jumped the start. So it was very fascinating for me, and I had thought that the numbers were stacking up. How long can Piastri put on this deadpan attitude, this face, this Raikkonen-esque kind of, you know, not too much chatter? But anyway, there's a lot of pressure. And at this track separates the men from the boys pretty quickly. And this is a fantastic street track. I mean, they're hitting 213 miles an hour down the straightaway. This is exciting. And of course, to get the setup right where you have the speed on the straightaways and control in the corners, I'm telling you, only one person does that perfectly these days, and that's Max Verstappen. So the only thing to do is to tip your hat, because it's just going to get better. We go to Singapore. I mean, Singapore is a pressure cooker. You've got the humidity. It's a night race, sure, but it's 100 degrees. And I'm telling you, this is going to be awesome. They're going to have the cool vests. And I remember there was a heat issue with the drivers, and the FIA was supposed to come up with an idea, you know, maybe air conditioning of some sort. And of course, Lewis Hamilton poo-pooed everything. He said, we're supposed to suffer. We get paid millions. So Singapore is really going to be exciting, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody is going to be on the tippy toes of tippy toes to see what happens. Qualifying, practice, everything. So this has been fantastic for the sport. I thought Max was completely out of the Drivers' World Championship, but no. There's a moment, there's a chance that he can do it, but of course, McLaren must falter a few more times. Will they, of course, gather up and have a kumbaya moment? Of course. You know, they're the loving family over there. So I say maybe put a little bit more rage in Piastri instead of this, I don't know, Red Cross tent where everybody loves each other and eat donuts. That's my tip of the day for McLaren. More rage. And it was great. George, unbelievable to get P2. I thought Mercedes really, really. And Kimi Antonelli, I mean, he finally, under a little pressure from Toto's paddle, he knew he had to deliver, and he did. And that's what separates the men from the boys. I thought the rookies did fantastic. Liam Lawson holding him back. I mean, it was a great, great thing to watch. And of course, the other thing that I'm not going to miss next year is DRS. Because really, the DRS trains, I think, take away from the machismo-ness that we need in overtaking, and maybe a little more testicular fortitude. But yes, this was a great race. I'm glad that they've been signed till 2030, so we have more Baku in the future. But now with the turnaround in Red Bull, and not only that, but they're loving each other. Mekies is doing a fantastic job. His bonus at the end of the season will be deserved. And I am very impressed on how Red Bull has flipped it, moved on from Christian Horner, and went back to their winning ways. And Dr. Marco, I mean, he already agrees with Hadjar. He should be his teammate in 2026 with the new regulations, the new motor. Everything is going to be so fresh. And I think everybody starts on a clean slate except for Max because, well, Max has some kind of, I don't know, superpower. Sometimes they call him a superfly. So anyway, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. A fantastic Grand Prix weekend. This is why we wake up at 4 in the morning to watch Grand Prix. Nevertheless, let's get to Nasser Hamid's corner. Yes, we've got Jack Harvey, who's now an IndyCar pundit, or I think he works for Fox Sports. I'm not quite sure. But for a while, he was a pretty good driver with a lot of talent. Did the British Formula 3 circuit. And Nasser runs into him at Laguna Seca back in 2012. Of course, we've got the Pita Brazio report, which is now, it's now Formula One history. Listen, take notes, because there'll be a pop quiz next week. But it's great stuff. And of course, the banter between me and Nasser is refreshing, wonderful. It never goes out of style. So I want everybody to enjoy this, because Singapore is going to be a zinga. Thank you. Bravo.
Hi, I'm Helio Castro Neves, four-time Indy 500 champion, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to the program. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the man himself, Nasser Hamid.
So there you have it, sir. Any question? Any smarty pants remarks?
No smarty pants remarks, Nasser. Just another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Another zero on the paycheck is well deserved.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the holidays coming, you might want to add two or three zeros there.
And they're certainly well deserved. Unfortunately, we only hand the zeros out one at a time every other year.
I think you moved your bank account from Bank of Burundi to Bank of Cambodia.
Really?
Yeah. Is thank that you. Correct?
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so now we have Jack Harvey online.
Jack Harvey or 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover?
Well, we're going to do Jack Harvey first because he's been waiting in the green room for so long.
Yes, green room. That is very true, sir. Sipping some green tea.
Perhaps.
Well, Jack Harvey is a very talented, very good-looking young English chap from Lincolnshire, and we have interviewed him when he was in Formula BMW, and now he's in GP3, doing very well. And he is supported by Racing Steps Foundation. And is a good chap, good racer, and we want to wish him all the best. And please enjoy this conversation with Mr. Jack Harvey.
Okay, folks, I'm doing an interview while texting with Mr. Jack Harvey. Jack, how are you today? And good to see you again.
Yeah, nice to see you as well. Pretty happy today. Obviously, P3 is a good result for anybody. We're looking to be a little bit better, but, you know, Mr. Sainz did a very good job today, and we didn't quite have that pace, but you know, should have still happy with P3.
On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best, how will you rate your season so far? And of course, I have some moments of the season for you, which I'll ask later.
Yeah, I think I would probably rate our season so far maybe 7.5. You know, the first two races were not really super, but the last three and so far this weekend have been really good. We're third in the championship, so, well, joint third in the championship, and our two rivals behind us, and also everybody in front of me in the championship are a little bit behind me now, so fingers crossed it's a good weekend to really take some points out of the lead and hopefully be leading the championship by the end of the weekend.
Now, this new GP3 car is very impressive, especially the sound of this car. How will you compare this car to a F3 machine?
Well, compared to Formula 3, it's quite a big difference, really. This car's got a lot more power. It's 420 brake horsepower, where Formula 3 was probably 220 or 230, maybe. So, I mean, that alone, you know, creates quite a new challenge for the drivers, and, you know, the lack of downforce compared to Formula 3 makes it interesting in the corners as well. So, it's very different, but it's a good step forward, I'd say.
In Formula BMW, you raced against Robin Friens, Carlos Sainz, in F3 against Felipe Nasr and Kevin Magnussen. How strong is the competition in GP3, and who are the main challengers?
To be honest, I think this is the most competitive year that I've raced with against the other people. I mean, Teo Ilomäki has been very quick. Both my teammates, kind of daily, Faku Ragalia, most of the Arden teams. Then you've got Karanen have been really fast with Kevin Courgeois and Aro Vainio. So really, there's always like eight or nine drivers who can really, you know, be at the front. So I think it's the most competitive championship that I've driven, and sometimes it's going to be a little bit up and down, but the minute we're staying consistent, so fingers crossed, if we stay like that, we'll be in a good place.
Okay, your fellow Racing Step Foundation racer James Collado recently joined Nicola Tall's All Road Management. Are you also in some management deal apart from RSF?
No, at the moment it's just with the Racing Step Foundation. So.
Okay, they're guiding your career?
Yeah, so far they have been, yeah.
Do they set a goal before each season that, okay, you have to finish in the top three in the championship or at least win so many races?
I think not really goals that are black and white. I think at the end of the day, the RSF's ambitions for the driver match, you know, what we want to do, you know, and at the end of the day, we all agreed that trying to win the championship was the goal. So at that point, there was mutual interest for us all to try and achieve it. So there's never you must finish in this position, you must do this. We would like you to do that, obviously.
Well, I have to say they are much more kinder and gentler than Red Bull. The Marco Machete is not flying there so much. Okay, now your first motor racing victory came at Zandvoort, as you corrected me, the Dutch track by the seaside, which is where James Hunt won his first ever victory, Formula One victory. And this year you took victory at Silverstone. What was more thrilling, winning first ever motor race or winning on home ground?
Well, I was lucky in BMWs in my second season. I actually won at Silverstone before, which obviously was a support race even then. So, you know, so far I've won two Grand Prix weekends in BMW and GP3. I think every moment has a real special place, you know, in your heart, where obviously taking the first win is a very special moment. Winning in Formula 3 again is. And to win your home Grand Prix in GP3 is, you know, they're all special moments, but I think it's really hard to say which is the most fun.
Okay. Now, who will win more races in F1 for Mercedes this year, Nico or LCH?
I hope Hamilton will. Okay. I hope Lewis will.
Okay. Your goal is Formula One, obviously, and we wish you all the best. Any desire to race in other great events like Le Mans and Indy 500 someday?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a big interest to try and do that. Maybe not right now. You know, for sure we're trying to push to make Formula One our number one goal, but, you know, for sure in the future, something I want to tick off is to do the 500 and to do Le Mans for sure.
Now, a couple of questions, a few questions about your 2012 British FC Championship. What did you learn most in your first year that helped you to take the title in your second season?
I think really what I needed from the car really helped, and I was a bit more firm when I was asking for what I wanted instead of just being told some things. To be honest, the way I was, you know, warming up the tyres made a big difference, and you know, Carlin really helped me out to understand the car. I had a great relationship with my engineer, and you know, I still maintained a good one with Carlin, even though I changed to ART. And you know, I think really they put a lot of effort into me to win the championship. You could really feel that you know, they were really behind me. So you know, all these things when they come together and you do the job, you can win.
You mentioned change of team. Was that driven by you or by RSF?
Well, RSF have a good relationship with ART anyway. James has stayed with ART for 3 years, and in the end, they felt like it was the best place for me to come. So, you know, I'm very happy. You know, I really like it here, and you know, I'm glad on the decision we took.
Okay. Now, before the season finale, and I've followed British F3 for 30-plus years, before the season finale, where you won the championship, what were the highs and lows of the season for you?
Well, the highs was obviously winning the championship, and Donington was a really tough weekend. You know, we knew that weekend we had to be on pole and win the races, which we did. The lows were Silverstone. I got so many penalties, and it's the most penalties I had in 2 years, you know, in one weekend. So I think that weekend, for sure, we felt like someone was not wanting us to win. But in the end, you know, we still had a good season, and I think last year there was some. Oh, it was a bit like a roller coaster. You know, sometimes there were some really big highs and some lows, and it was really, in terms of emotionally, it wasn't that consistent. You know, where this year has been good so far. It happens, you know. Nothing is ever a smooth road. There's always a few bumps along the way, and you know, I think we showed last year if a bump happens, we can adapt it and still do a good result after.
And the championship last year was decided in the final round. Going into the final round, did you feel any pressure that, hey, if I miss out on the championship, it will be a disaster or anything like that?
I'm sure there was some pressure there, but I didn't really think about that, to be honest. So going into the weekend, I was actually third in the championship. Although I was only 6 points off of taking the lead, I knew that we would have a strong weekend. So.
Well, you may not believe this, but going into the final round, I had a very strong feeling that Jack Harvey is going to be the champion, and I'm not making this up.
I believed it as well.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, looking forward, let me ask you a question. If your sponsor, Racing Staff Foundation or whoever, if you have a choice to go into the World Series by Renault or GP2, which one would you prefer and why?
Well, I think the path that we're on now is probably to do GP2. You know, the way with the tyres, with the team, I hope maybe next year if I do a good job and, you know, we can get the right deal, we could maybe do GP2. But I feel like we're on the path there, not to World Series, to be honest. You know, I think if we were going to make World Series, we would have done it this year instead of making GP3, and we felt like this was a better place to be.
Apart from Spa, what other tracks you like racing at?
So I think when you support the Formula One, you're very spoiled for circuits. Hungary is always quite a good one. You know, especially the middle section, it's very tight, it's very fast. To be honest, all the tracks are good. Barcelona was really good. Silverstone obviously is really good, but I'm totally biased for that one. But I'm sure Monza and Abu Dhabi will be special.
Now, this is very important for our male listeners. Which circuit has the best looking pit babes?
Monza for sure.
Okay, very good. Okay, finally, I appreciate your time. How about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? And we have quite a few in UK, as you know already.
Hey guys, thanks for support. We keep working hard and hope we do everybody proud and win the championship.
See you. And what's your web address, please?
It's www.jackharveyracing.com.
Thank you very much, sir.
Jack, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Now, our favorite show, 50 Words on the Japanese Grand Prix. Now, this is the 2013 Japanese Grand Prix. Yes, I made sure.
Kobayashi is not on the podium.
Kobayashi is not on the podium, and I miss Kobayashi.
Yeah, me too.
But what can you do? But anyway, why don't you start it off?
From Frank Douglasson. Oh, Frank Douglasson, I believe, put a posting on some group of the graphic designers in England. They have a link to their website, and they put old liveries on current cars, and some of them are so beautiful. All of them are beautiful, but some are very touching. So please check out on the forum on the link, and you will like it.
Let's get back on track here now, sir.
Okay, Frank Douglasson writes, "Ah, yes, Suzuka overtakes matter again. Best race of the year."
Miguel says, "By going slower, Vettel ended up going faster. Weber went faster, and he finished slower. And Grosjean did the same. Such is the Pirelli do, and you can't get more zen than that." But it was entertaining.
More zen or more yen?
You have to call the doctor.
Okay. Neon Zapper, Suzuka is always an exciting race, and this year's winner was unpredictable for quite a while. That's great stuff.
Kehe Sin writes, "Weber wonders what if he had gone for the two-stopper. Grosjean comes good, and that guy with the finger does it again."
Finally, Yay. "First time I think we have seen Vettel run a strategic race perfectly, although it would appear Marco chose Mark's strategy. Entertaining race from lights to flags. Not seen this for a while. Looking forward to India now."
There you go. And
I don't know if he's talking about the restaurant or the race.
Well,
could be both.
You know, the naan is good in both places.
Absolutely.
There you have it. So thanks, Nasser, for the 50 words. And thanks, guys, everybody who does this.
And ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, but, you know, we need more contributors.
Yes.
Let's get these people.
I think everybody is loving us now. We don't get any slings and arrows.
Nothing. Nobody complains about me and Fernando. Maybe we're just out there and nobody's listening.
But I would like to thank our Dutch listener, Mr. Alvin. He did send me a nice email about the interview with Peter Windsor, and we stay in touch with him. So it's good that, you know, our core dedicated listeners are still
We have some long-standing listeners.
Yeah, but we welcome new ones also, and those who don't write, we welcome them. Well, I think drop us a line someday.
Are we the oldest F1 podcast?
We've been going around for... what is this number now?
640.
Yeah, I mean, this has been going around for a long time.
I mean, I don't even have hair anymore, and I had a full head when I started this podcast. So yeah. It's a tough job, but somebody has to do it.
Yeah, and we enjoy it, and we thank all our listeners for their support. And, yeah, it's been going around since, like, what, 2006?
2005. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It's pretty impressive.
It is pretty impressive, and just...
All credit to the charming host of F1 Weekly.
Absolutely.
And the ever-humble Mr. Rogers.
You know, put a dollar in an envelope and send it to the Palatial Studios.
There you go.
I think it's downtown Beverly Hills.
Wow. This edition of F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Martini and Rossi, bringing you fine sparkling vino and liveries in motor racing, or as the natives would say, automobilismo. And Fernando, the first win came same year in Hungary. Now, you're a music man. You remember the Steely Dan song, "This is the Day of the Expanding Man"?
This is one of my favorite songs.
Oh,
sir.
Cool. In Budapest, it was the Day of the Expanding Bibendum. Do you remember?
I remember. But you know what? It was legal. Ferrari started to complain. I'm still stuck on that.
Yeah, and they were using that same tire for almost over a season, so that was kind of surprising. Championship won in 2007 for Kimi Raikkonen, winning 3 of the last 4 races and removing a 26-point deficit, which was very impressive. Nando, uno, dos. He's stuck on 2 championships since 2006, but he will go down in the history of motor racing as the man, the hombre who brought down the Red Baron. Grand Prix wins 20 for Kimi, 32 for Nando, podium 75 for Mr. Raikkonen. Now, in terms of teams, Kimi started out with Sauber, went to McLaren, then went to Ferrari, then, you know, was paid a lot of money to go to NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, and now came back with Lotus, and now he'll be with Ferrari. And Nando started with Minardi, Renault, McLaren, 1 year of a 3-year contract only was done. Another story for another day. Then Renault, back to Flavio's arms. And then La Ferrari, where he was very, very happy. The top, ow, ow, dog, till Monza. Now he's on equal footing. And you know what happens when you're on equal footing with a guy who's equally good? What happens?
We have cage rattling.
Yes, and that will begin next season.
Yeah, but don't forget, Janai Capital needs money, so they sell 35% of Lotus F1 to Infinity Racing.
Yeah, which is one of the head honcho is this Mansoor Ejaz homie. He's an investment guru, and he's very well connected with the U.S. government. He's been involved in a lot of deals, you know, and obviously being in wealth management, serious upscale wealth management, he has a lot of contacts in the Middle East. And let's see what happens there. But my take on the whole this on all of this is very simple. Nothing to do with him or Sergei Sirotkin and his familia. And this is a thing I learned a long time ago when I started following motor racing. It goes for teams and drivers and everybody. If you want to go and win in motor racing, you must involve yourself with people who have passion for motor racing. Money will get you there, but it's not going to buy you success. And I think a lot of these people are doing... Do you remember that guy, Alex Schneider, I believe, was the guy, Russian-born Canadian? He brought in what was Jordan team or whatever it was, and they changed the name to Midland. That was a pure business investment. He invested hundreds of million and then sold it. So you know, these things, it's good to have all this money coming in, but they really need some serious investment from people who are really passionate and have staying power and staying desired in motor racing. That's just my opinion.
I agree with that opinion, and a great example is Toyota and their use of Formula One. Got nothing done. But let's not forget, Infiniti is owned by Nissan.
No, dude, this is not that Infiniti.
Are we sure?
Oh, yeah, positive. This is Infiniti Racing Partnership. Because they're not using Renault engine. This is a different company.
But see, that's what's confusing, because they're calling themselves Infiniti Racing.
But with a Y at the end.
Ah, because we have Infiniti Red Bull.
Yeah, that's I at the end.
That's what I wanted you to clear up.
I'm here to help.
This has nothing to do with Nissan or Renault or anything. This is completely...
Or Dacia. Yeah, this is Racing Partnership. And I think he has money from Arabian investors,
right,
and all that.
I think you're right. The passion might not be working out, and Lotus F1 could be in line for some tough cookies.
You know, Ferrari has taken James Ellison from there,
exactly.
Kimi Raikkonen. And
they're taking all the good stuff,
yeah,
because they know. No, I totally agree, and we'll see what happens. Please continue.
Okay, major achievement before these two youths came to Formula One, being Raikkonen and Nando. Kimi Raikkonen was 2000 champion in Formula Renault UK, 2 liters, 7 wins from 10 races. So this kid bypassed Jeep, whatever there was in those days, F3 Euro Series and Happy Doss, and went straight to Formula One, scoring a point on his debut. And Nando was champion in 1999, what was called Euro Open Series by Nissan. This was also known as World Series by Nissan. And this is what, when Renault bought Nissan, they changed the name to World Series by Renault. And then the previous series was mostly Spanish-based. They made it Continental Europe, which is where Kovalainen and Kubica came from. And Nando had 6 wins from 15 starts and obviously has never stopped to impress no matter what he raced or when he qualified.
Outstanding, Nas. Keep up the good work. We've got motorsports coming up pretty soon. I mean, Motorsports Mondial, that is.
Si, senor.
Maybe we should take a little quick break, or do you have some more statistics?
Well, we can take a short break, enjoy some, Kool-Aid, and then we'll do the we'll have new motivation to live and enjoy life after drinking that, and then we'll do the Motorsports Mondia.
Excellent, Nasser. Thank you. So we'll be back.
Hello, listeners. This is Tim with Tech Time, and today I have a very special treat. On the line, I have Kevin Hollenbach, an actual race car fabricator with Jeff Burton Autosport, participating in the PASS series, which is a grassroots short track series focused on driver development for NASCAR. Kevin is originally from beautiful Hillsborough, New Jersey, and now lives in Concord, North Carolina. Kevin, welcome to the show, and please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Thanks for having me, Tim. My name is Kevin. Like you said, I'm from Hillsborough, New Jersey, now live in Concord. I joined Jeff Burton Autosport in September as a fabricator and tire guy, and I love it. Living the dream.
Excellent. So, You called yourself the tire guy. Would you mind explaining a little bit about what that means and what your responsibilities are, either in the garage or on a race weekend?
Yeah, I'm in charge of everything that has to do with tires, wheels, at the track, at the shop. I was chosen, Jeff needed me to do tires, so at the shop, I maintenance the wheels, make sure they're clean, mark how many laps are on them, so we can use them as a later test for race. It's not like NASCAR Cup Series where you get to the track and the tires are already mounted, ready to go. I have to pick them out. We run a bias slide, which really is all about stagger. Stagger's a circumference difference between the left rear and the right rear tire. So I'm in charge of picking out the right tires, getting them mounted, sizing them, making sure the stagger's right in each set. And then during practice, I do tire pressures, keep track of everything, check our wears, make sure we're wearing evenly across every tire. And that's about it at the track. And then the shop, I kind of record data, figure out what the car was doing based on how your tire pressure gains came back at the track. And that's about it.
So you mentioned that you give a lot of attention to tire pressure. So can you explain a little bit about how the tire pressure affects either the performance of the tire, the grip, the wear, various things that are probably very important to a successful race?
Yeah, with a bias slide, like I said, it's all about stagger. Getting the car to turn using a bigger right rear tire than left rear. It's like a solo cup. You put it on the ground and you roll it, it's going to roll towards the smallest side. Same thing with their rear tires. So on shorter tracks with narrower turns, we require more stagger to help the car turn itself. On squeezing corners, we run less. So air pressure, I can really adjust with the bias slide to get the stagger we need. I can go more air in the right rear, less air in the left rear for more stagger, or vice versa for less stagger.
So when you show up to a track on a certain weekend, what do you think about when you're choosing these tire pressures?
Based on how sharp a turn is or corner is, it means we either need more stagger or less stagger. So I go back to my notes from similar tracks and kind of get a ballpark where it starts.
Wow.
And then air pressure, we could kind of adjust as we go.
Do you find that in trying to get the stagger correctly set up that there might be other consequences? For example, your outer tire, which has higher pressure, might have a different wear rate than your inner tire?
Actually, yeah. With the more stagger we run, it puts camber in the rear tires. So you'll actually wear the rear tire differently than the left rear, and you kind of have to watch that. But the gain with staggers overwhelms the disadvantage of the tire wear.
Huh. So you must be out there watching the TVs or have your binoculars and you're paying very close attention to a specific location on the car to know, you know, you're wearing too fast and might need to come in for an early pit stop or something like that?
Well, actually, before the tire hits the track, I have a depth gauge and I record how deep the tread is on the tire. There's little holes that go down, and with your depth gauge, you can figure out how much rubber is actually on the track at the time. So after a run, I'll come in, and when the car comes in, I'll clean off the rubber that we picked up, and I'll check the depth again, and then I'll subtract that depth from the original depth, figure out where we're wearing tires, how much we're wearing tires. So that really is how I figure out what our tire wear is.
What is life like on a race weekend for a team member?
It can be crazy. Some races are 2 days, some are actually just 1 day, and then there's some big shows that are actually like a week long.
Wow.
When we first get there, we unload everything, get everything organized, and we have to take parts of the tech, make sure it fits the body template, make sure the weight's correct, and then while they're doing all this, the tire guy's actually down the tires, picking out tires. Get them ready for when the car gets back to the garage or the pit stall, the tires tires and they were ready to go on practice. During the race, the tire guys constantly checking tire pressures in the spares or the change sets, making sure they're ready to go at a moment's notice. So it's really crazy. It's never ending. So we load up and on the way home.
Well, we wish you the best of luck in your races, and we'll be following your team. And one last question, do you have any special message to the listener?
Yeah, if you're a fan or want to be involved in racing, just go out, support your short track, your big track, no matter what it is, they're racing asphalt, make sure you go out and support the track. If you're wanting to get involved, go talk to people in the pit. They're awesome. That's how I got involved. There's always people, especially at short tracks, looking for help, so don't be afraid to get your hands dirty or whatever. Thanks for having me, Tim.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for being on the show, Kenny.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com, and now, here's the PBR report.
Now it's time for a round of PBR. Mr. Brazier, welcome to your show. How was Jersey in the company of F1 drivers?
I had a great vacation, thanks, Nazir. I spent a week in Jersey. It was lucky with the weather. I had a great vacation and got back last night.
And you were in the company of some famous F1 drivers, I understand.
Well, I saw Derek Warwick. There was an air show on the Thursday with the fantastic Red Arrows were the star of the show. And as I was walking along the seafront there, I saw Derek Warwick. So he didn't recognize me, which was disappointing. Of course, Nigel Mansell's there now, and he's got a dealership there on the island as well. But I didn't bump into our Nigel.
Okay. Now, are you ready to serve us some cold, hard facts from the Italian Grand Prix weekend?
Yes, indeed. But I've got one thing to mention first. Did you notice that FOM are putting digital advertising on now? I didn't notice it in the broadcast at the time, but it's come up on a couple of the Formula One blogs since. Something worth looking out for. It's quite interesting. They've been overlaying Pirelli and Emirates logos, some others, actually on the track and on the grass runoff areas. It's an interesting development in the way that they're promoting Formula One.
Yes, you have to take care of people who pay the big bucks.
Sure. I've put a link on the forum to one of the blogs that has got an interesting piece on it.
Oh.
So I suggest you take a look on the F1 Weekly forum.
I will certainly do that, and thank you for doing this.
So let's talk about qualifying. Sebastian Vettel became the third driver in Formula One history with at least 40 career poles. It's amazing to think in his short career that he's reached the third. Only Senna at 65 and Michael Schumacher at 68 have taken more poles. It was also the 50th pole for Red Bull, puts them sixth in the all-time list. So that's quite incredible.
Yeah, you know, 40 career poles for a kid who made his debut at Indy in 2007. I mean, that is very, very scary.
He's raking them up at an incredible rate. It was also only the first time that Red Bull locked out the front row at Monza, but it is the 20th time that Vettel and Webber have shared the front row.
Talking of Webber, do you think he will have a win this season? It's looking pretty sad right now, and I don't think Bastian is in the mood. See what happened? I read that at Monza, maybe at Spa, that Webber had a sort of a get together with some old friends and journalists I think it was at Monza because it was the last European race in the Red Bull, energy zone. And while everybody was there, Bastian was fiddling with his iPad or iPhone or something down below. He did not even attend that function.
Yeah, it's a shame. Another thing was that McLaren failed to get a car in the top seven at Monza for the first time since 1983, when Niki Lauda was 13th and John Watson was 15th. And you got to remember that last year, only last year, they had a 1-2 finish at this race. So it's only been a year.
Yeah, this has been quite a dramatic drop for McLaren, but hopefully they will come back next year.
Yeah. Felipe Massa scored his best qualifying results since Bahrain. He was fourth. And it was also the fourth time that this year that he's out-qualified Alonso.
Yeah, I mean, his performance was giving me some idea that, you know, this guy is has been told your services are no longer required and is now wants to do the best he can.
Yeah, go out on a flourish. Toro Rosso, they got both cars in the top 10, and that's the first time they did that since the 2011 Indian Grand Prix.
Hulk is next.
Hulk is next, yes. He recorded his second best career starting position. That was after his surprise pole in the wet at Brazil in 2010. It's the seventh time now in history that a Sauber, not a BMW Sauber, but a Sauber, has started in the first three positions.
Okay, now we go to the race. Something important for you.
Yeah, the Vettel may have scored his 300th podium finish for a German driver, which again is quite a statistic, but fortunately Great Britain still leads with an incredible 584. Amazing statistic.
Yeah, almost twice.
Yeah. So when it comes to point scoring, Vettel's now won out of the last four races. He's won three times and finished third. So he's scored 90 points. Alonso, the next one behind him, has scored only 58. And I think that's just telling us how the rest of the season's going to go.
Yeah, especially with all that talk that Monza will not suit Red Bull. So looks like four in a row is pretty much almost...
It's in the can, isn't it?
Yeah.
This was Vettel's third win at Monza. All of them were from pole, of course. And each of them, coincidentally, with exactly 49 laps each time. Just shows how you can be consistent when you have the fastest car and you're in pole position.
Who knows? He might be a San Francisco 49er fan now.
Yeah, something like that. Red Bull's Monza success was its 40th in Formula One. Its first came in China in 2009, which was 85 races ago. That means that the British squad, Red Bull, has won almost every other race, which is quite an incredible running rate.
Very impressive.
Alonso's podium at Monza was his 40th podium finish for Ferrari, and that's out of 70 races. So that's a good running, right?
Unbelievable.
It's also, if you remember, we mentioned that McLaren last year scored a 1-2 last year. So far this season, neither McLaren driver has appeared on the podium. A couple of notes a little bit further down the grid. Jean-Éric Vergne, he's completed the lowest racing mileage of any driver. 1754 miles. Hamilton's next on 2259. The ever smiling Daniel Ricciardo equaled his best career result, a seventh, and that equals his seventh in China this year. And finally, it was the 60th straight points finish for Ferrari, the Scuderia closing in on the all-time record of 64, which is currently held by McLaren.
Now, I have to ask you a question. This new Ferrari pairing, do you think it's going to work out, or are we going to have an endless season of CR, page rattling?
Well, I think it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch, how that dynamic works. You have to think Fernando Alonso is a little older and a little wiser, and how those two personalities are going to get on. But I guess it's going to be whoever's going to be out front in the points after the first few races is going to take the initiative. And I can't see Alonso not doing that. I mean, they're two very good drivers, but I think when push comes to shove, Fernando Alonso is able to make the best of any situation.
Mr. Brazier, thank you very much for another fine serving of PBR.
Thanks, Nazir.
Peter, thanks again for another outstanding Pabst Blue Ribbon beer.
So, Nasser, introduce his driver, please.
Yes, this is Tony Kanaan. The conversation took place at the IRL race at Sears Point, also known as Infineon Raceway. So my thanks to him for taking the time to talk to me. And, of course, he's from Brazil and raced in Europe, and he really came through the tough way, like Nigel Mansell worked hard. There was a time in Europe he was sleeping in the garage of the team to save money and to go racing, and then came here and has been racing Helio Castroneves for a long time. And I asked him, you know, he was a teenager when his dad passed away, so I asked him who has been the biggest help and influence, and the answer was Rubinho. And he was pleasantly surprised to hear that there is a horse in this country named after Rubens Barrichello, and he said he will let him know. Okay. So it's, and he's a good racer. He's come very close to winning the Indy 500, and that is his main goal right now. And there was a lot of talk he may leave Andretti Green Racing and go somewhere else, but he's staying with them, and he is their man as far as the series is concerned. So thanks again to Tony, TK as they call him here, and hope listeners enjoy the conversation.
Okay, I'm here at Sears Point with Tony Kanaan, full name Antoine Riscala Kanaan Filho. Tony, how are you today, and how is the weekend going so far?
Very good. I mean, it's a beautiful day here in Sonoma, and the weather has been great, and the racetrack is it's awesome, so I can't complain.
You were New Year's gift to your parents, being born on the last day of 1974. What are your earliest memories of motor racing before you got into it yourself?
Watching with my dad, actually, Formula One races in Rio back in the 80s. So that's probably around 82. That's when I first started watching it.
Who were you more interested in, Nelson Piquet or Ayrton Senna?
Senna was always my my hero, so always Senna.
Okay, you have won this Granja Viana 500 kart race in your country, I think, six times. What is the secret of your success? Because this is a pretty tough competition.
Seven times, actually.
Seven? Oh, excuse me, moi.
I think it's, you know, the secret's been having good drivers and consistent drivers and you know, just understand how the race goes.
Nigel Mansell worked very hard for his success, and so have you. Can you please tell our listeners about your days in Europe when you were sleeping in team's garage and hustling to get your name recognized?
Well, I mean, I did whatever I could to stay there, and that's, you know, that's what I needed to do. So sleeping in the shop and you know, working my way through, and really, I think apart from giving up a lot of things in my life to be there, I think people realized that I was talented enough, and they gave me an opportunity, and that I was a hard worker. So that's how I think I, you know, I got the success that I got.
What are some of your best memories from racing in Europe?
Racing before the F1 race on Sunday when I was doing Opel Lotus, and winning the Imola Grand Prix after Senna died, the year after he died. So it was probably one of my best memories for sure.
What is your favorite track in Europe?
Spa-Francorchamps.
I'll say that. Okay, who was guiding and was the biggest influence in your racing career before you moved to the U.S.?
Rubens Barrichello. He's still a good friend of mine, and he was definitely a guy that you know, helped me out a lot.
Do you know there's a racing horse in America named Rubens Barrichello? I kid you not.
I don't know that, so I'll tell him, so it's funny.
Yeah, please tell him. And talking of Rubinho, some years ago you had his helmet at Indy, and he had your helmet at Monaco. Was there a hidden message there, or just two friends trying to do their own thing?
It was like I had a dream to race an F1 car in Monaco, and he had a dream to race in Indianapolis, so we kind of did that, but you know, we just actually, he took me for a ride in Monaco, and I took him for a ride in Indy.
Great. What is the biggest difference between the European and American racing scene, apart from ovals and better hot dogs at your sponsor 7-Eleven?
I think the people are different. I mean, the fans are totally different, and we have a different way of racing here. We always, you know, we welcome people to the paddock, which in Europe you don't have a lot of chance to do that. So it's just, they're all fans. They're all good fans, but it's just different.
Interesting you say fans are different. What is the difference you feel?
Like I said, I mean, here people, some people are more hardcore than there, but it's just the culture, it's different. I mean, fans here, they can get close to us, ask for autographs, and over there, I mean, they don't let anybody in the paddock.
Do you like that as a driver, guys like me coming up to you in your trailer?
I don't mind. I mean, I think it's part of it. That's the way it is in America, and, you know, I've been here for 13 years. So I think I got used to it for sure.
And we certainly appreciate that. 10 years ago, you were Indy Lights champion ahead of close friend Elio Castroneves and another homeboy, Kiki, Cristiano D'Amara. What were the highs and lows of the season?
On that season?
Yeah.
Well, we're all young, and we're always all trying to make it to IndyCar. So yeah, it was a pretty good fight. So thank God I ended up winning. But the highs was obviously winning a lot of races, and the lows are trying to race against your best friends and beat them. That was probably tough.
As we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the Swami, the King himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and gelato regards.
What's going on?
Yeah, well, I have an idea. So now we not only have a competition yellow, we also have a fraudulent caution.
A fraudulent caution?
Yeah.
Now that's exciting. See, yeah. we're picking up the terminology a little bit, a little more sophistication.
Yeah. We strive to be the best like NASCAR, so we're trying.
Okay. Well, I thought maybe somebody threw a shoe on the track.
No, that was in Canada. That was in Canada.
I know, but it's exciting.
On Denica Patrick of all the people.
Yeah. Now, I even heard that Penske was involved in some shenanigans.
Yeah, I have not had a chance to read up on that, but team also came on the radar.
Okay, I'm just checking everything, Nass. Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. So much going on, yet so little time. Of course, I'll remind our listeners before we begin reading 50 words on the Italian Grand Prix that we have an outstanding interview coming up in podcast number 637. Of course, a chat with Peter Windsor.
It was very nice to talk to him and hear about his early days in Australia, his experiences in motor racing. And, of course, I asked him about USF1, and he gave an answer, which is understandable. But, you know, so much we can do. But my many thanks to him and also for our listener, Mr. Philip Pegler, who made this possible. So please don't miss this conversation next week.
Thank you, Nass. And now let's go ahead and read 50 words from the forum, and I'm going to go ahead and start with comments from Ye. Some midfield fights tried to keep it interesting, but really, nothing could stop Fritz. Booing at the podium is getting worse.
Okay, next, Sehissan, I believe. Business as usual for their German guy with the overused finger. LCH flies for only part of the race, while the retiring Weber gets a podium for the last time of asking at Monza. Not much to see at the top end of the field then. Anything likely to stop Vettel at this stage? No, I thought not.
From Jackson. Thought Alonso might pull a fast one, but my hopes were for naught. Always great to see the Tifosi's energy at Monza.
Neon Zapper. Back marker. Drivers fended off top contenders midfield. Massa's performance reeked of pressure to keep his seat and please the home team crowd. Weber graciously proved his retirement is by choice, and once again the kid is 10 seconds ahead of the field. With mostly one box, Pirelli looked pretty good at home.
From Frank Douglasson, dear NBCSN, I know you lot get giddy at the chance to hang out with a legend, but being a legendary F1 driver does not make one a competent race commentator. You should have known how badly that was going to go after the podium in Austin last year. Please don't rubbish up your production exchange for a fun day for yourselves again. Love the viewers. And, of course, he's talking about Mario Andretti joining Steve Matchett and David Hobbs and Lee Diffie in the commentation booth. I agree somewhat that Mario is a terrific driver, but not a great commentator, not a color guy.
Well, yeah, not everybody is going to be a good commentator. But, you know, respect everybody's opinion, so we don't have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
Okay, finally, we have a few words of wisdom from Dr. Mark. Perilously close to being a yawn of a race at Monza, but once again, there were midfield scraps to save the day. Let's hope Renault make a poor engine for 2014.
Uh-oh. Shameful!
Sounds like a finger pointing at the world champion.
Yes, I think you're right.
Past, present, and possibly future.
But I'm afraid that's not going to happen. Renault's V6 turbo is going to be wonderful and explosive.
I think it's going to be strong. I don't see them just draw. I think the team that's really, you know, they have a lot of cars that are using, so they will have a lot of data. Same with Mercedes. But Ferrari, they're going to have themselves and Sauber, so I have some concerns on them. But if they come out with a strong, faster engine, then it can happen. Then that will be good for. But then we're going to have another problem. Who's going to win more races?
Yeah.
I think they will cut each other's throat. If the package is competitive, I don't think these two people are, you know, different animals than what Nando had McLaren. But I will not be surprised if they take points from each other. I just cannot see Alonso being torn while Kimi has a chance and slow down and let him win. It's not going to happen. Kimi, you know, I think the only person he ever listens to is Man in the Mirror. And so he's not going to take any orders.
I agree. It's going to be exciting. I want to thank everybody who contributes to the forum. Thank you, gentlemen. That was great. Nass, another outstanding podcast.
Thank you very much, sir. I was thinking this morning, we're closing in on 700 podcasts. It's been quite a while. It's been a fun ride. I hope it goes on for a long time. And none of this would be possible without the support and love of our listeners. So many thanks to them again.
Good point. Thank you, Nasser. And thanks to the listeners. Good night.
Bye-bye.